This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Taxed out stocks stress out over the twists and turns in the Republican tax plan. Sending the Dow down triple digits, we'll tell you why, and we'll hear from the president's top economic advisor on what drove the White House plan. Mouse of pain, Disney misses estimates and investors initially react harshly, but then forgive. Drilling for answers. What are these two Americans doing in the presidential palace in Venezuela? Our investigation coming up. All that and more on Nightly Business Report for Thursday, November 9th. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Sue Herrera has the evening off. Well, stocks went on a wild ride today, all triggered by headlines about the GOP tax plan. The big fear for the market, the steep cuts in the corporate tax rate may be pushed back until 2019. And with that, stocks sold off, though eventually they cut some of those losses. The Dow finished the day down 101 points to 23,461. The Nasdaq dropped 39, and the S&P 500 was off 9. So the tax wrangling included today the passage of the legislation by a House panel. That paves the way for a full House vote next week, according to Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. But what moved stocks today was not that news, but details from the newly released Senate version of a proposed law. Ilan Mui has more.
The Senate releasing its long-awaited tax plan today, and that proposal would delay the reduction in the corporate tax rate by 1 year. It wouldn't get down to 20% until 2019, but it would stay there permanently. Now, this bill would also limit companies' ability to deduct interest, but it would allow them to fully and immediately deduct their expenses for 5 years. There are big changes coming on the individual side as well. The Senate bill would keep 7 individual tax brackets, but it would lower the top tax rate to just 38.5%. It would also completely get rid of the deduction for state and local taxes, but it would preserve some other very popular deductions, such as the one for medical expenses. It would also keep a $1 million limit on the deduction for mortgage interest. And as for the estate tax, it keeps that in place, but it doubles the exemption from $5 million to $11 million for individuals before that tax kicks in. So there are still many long negotiations to come over this proposal. But for today, Republicans making some real progress on tax reform. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Ilan Mui in Washington.
Before the craziness of today, John Harwood sat down with Gary Cohn, director of the National Economic Council, to get some insight into the White House strategy for the tax plan. In other words, what were the driving factors for the plan?
So the president had two really important principles. Number one is we have to deliver middle-class tax cuts to the hardworking families in this country. Number two is our corporate tax system just is not competitive with the rest of the world. We have to create a corporate tax rate, and along with that, a pass-through tax rate that makes us competitive with the rest of the world so we can attract businesses back to the United States.
Let me suggest an alternative principle. Look at the components of the plan. Big corporate reductions, big pass-through reductions for business, much more tax cuts for businesses than for individuals. You've got the elimination of the estate tax. You've got the preservation of the step-up basis. You've got the elimination of the alternative minimum tax. What you have is a bunch of people, including you, including the president, who think, what I do is good for the economy. Therefore, taxing the things that I do less will be good for the economy and good for other people, instead of giving direct benefits to those people. Because middle-class people in this tax cut do not get very much indirect benefit.
I disagree with you. I just completely disagree with you.
Look, you look at joint tax, $1 trillion in net cuts for business, $200 billion through estate tax.
I agree with this.
And $300 billion for individuals. So four times as much in business tax cuts and estate tax as for individuals.
Yep. But, John, if you look at what we're doing for middle-class taxpayers, the reality is kind of simple. The median income family in the United States, the family that earns about $60,000 in the United States, the speaker talked about them getting an $1,182 tax cut. That family is now paying a marginal tax rate of less than 1%. They're paying less than $500 of total taxes in the system. So a $60,000 earner, family of four, is paying less than $500. We have cut their taxes significantly. You can't go much further in the tax system.
You're saying you can't give middle class taxpayers more of a tax break than you've done?
Unless you want to start going negative tax rates and go into the negative world. So when people score this, you're scoring against the bound of zero.
Companies that benefit from pass-through rates are high income because if they were middle income, they'd be paying at the 25% rate already. The vast majority of those benefits going to wealthy business.
I think you've got to wait till the whole plan is done and see where we finally end up and see what the plan comes out. Everything in our tax plan is meant to encourage investment.
You're not saying, as you did a few weeks ago, that the wealthy do not get a tax cut under your plan?
I'm saying there's unique situations to everyone out there. Everyone has their own story. It's not our intention to give the wealthy a tax cut.
But they are getting one.
I don't believe that we set out to create a tax cut for the wealthy. If someone's getting a tax cut, I'm not upset that they're getting a tax cut.
Your old colleague Steve Bannon in the White House. Ask him why they didn't design a tax plan focused on average Trump voters. And when I talked to Larry Summers, who's your predecessor at the NEC, also Treasury Secretary, he said, look, they're doing what their money wants.
So they're entitled to their opinions.
Why are they wrong?
We have achieved our objectives. We are delivering a middle-income tax cut. And we are lowering corporate taxes to make ourselves competitive with the world.
Yeah. Another thing Larry Summers told me, and the country wants to spend more on defense. We've got a whole lot of baby boomers retiring. We are going to need more money for government and not less. So the Penn Wharton model, run by a former Bush administration economist, not a Democrat, says that this plan by 2040 will lose $4 trillion. During that time, the number of people on Social Security is going to go from 45 million to 72 million. How in the world does that make sense?
We firmly believe that we are creating a model that creates economic growth in this country.
But you know no tax cuts ever paid for itself.
The years that we increase deficit are years when our economy is slowing down. We continue to borrow more and more money. So the number one thing we can do for the United States citizens is to grow the economy. This tax plan is meant to grow the economy.
Are you thinking that you'll deal with that Social Security, Medicare, baby boomer retirement issue later by entitlement reform that reduces benefits?
Look, the president on the economic front laid out three core principles or three core initiatives that he wanted to get done in his first couple of years. Number one was reg reform. Number two was taxes. And number three was infrastructure. We're working our way methodically through reg reform, taxes, and infrastructure. I think when he gets done with those, I think welfare is going to come up. That's our near-term economic agenda right now.
And Tyler, interestingly, though Gary Cohn wouldn't say so, Paul Ryan, the House Speaker today, said that is precisely our objective, that we're in the long run going to go for entitlement reform. So the thinking of Republicans is they will accept those higher deficits and go after Medicare and Social Security to try to reduce those liabilities later.
Did you ever agree on anything with Mr. Cohn, John? It didn't seem so. Let me turn to a question that was sort of implicit in what you were talking about with him, and that is the idea that by cutting taxes on corporations and businesses, that a lot of the benefit then flows through, the old phrase is trickle down, to the middle class. Did you probe that with him at all, or do people believe that that is what's going to happen?
I did probe that with him, and he said, first of all, explicitly, trickle down is good for the economy. He also said that foreign cash coming back to American companies will help workers, even if it goes to dividends and stock buybacks, through that trickle down process.
All right, John, thank you very much. Great interview. And if you'd like
thank
to
you.
See more, it really was. If you'd like to see more of it, go to our website, nbr.com. The complete package is there. Well, here to put today's market action into context and tell us whether investors should expect more days like this, i.e. up and down days, is David Seaberg. He's managing director and head of sales and trading at Cowen. David, always great to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me, Tyler.
I don't know whether you're a new guest here to NBR. I can't remember, but welcome anyway. So today was a seesaw kind of day. Down about 200 points on the Dow at one point, ended up cutting those losses in half. Should investors be ready for more up and down days as this tax bill wends its way through the sausage making process?
Yeah, no question is going to bring some sort of a level of volatility to the markets. I mean, we saw it today. You know, I would say to you this, Todd, just to keep it simple, tax is not priced in right now to this market. I mean, to some extent, it's going to move around on the headlines because you have tape reading algos that are actually seeing the headline hit and reacting. So algorithmic type trading that is reacting to the news headline. But ultimately, when you think about it, for the long term investor, the setup right now, the market's not pricing in tax cuts. So the S&P earnings, if you look at it for 2018, I think the expectations now are about $146 in S&P earnings. A tax cut at the corporate level could provide an additional $10 of earnings power to the $146 for 2018.
So that's a very interesting point. Two interesting points there. One is that be aware, dear investor, that when the market is reacting, it may be algorithms that are doing the reacting. But number two, that the market hasn't really priced in the possibility of tax cuts. Follow that through for me. $10 more earnings on the S&P translates into what level on the S&P?
Right. I mean, it puts it up. I mean, you're looking at probably 150 more S&P points or something to that extent. But ultimately, you have to look at this and say this is a global growth narrative that has been pushing this market higher. The backdrop has really been earnings. Earnings have been incredibly strong. We've seen earnings, you know, revisions to the upside. We've got a backdrop of, or a pipeline, if you will, of approved corporate buybacks that haven't even been struck yet. So the buybacks will continue. And we're seeing top line, which is revenue growth, estimates being increased as well. So we're in an environment right now where it's really an earnings-driven market. You're not seeing money come out of equities on the news that tax may not be pushed through. But if it goes through, it's a big deal, and the market will react positively to that.
David, thanks for sticking around with us for us tonight.
Thanks,
David Seaberg with Cowen and Company. Well, President Trump's second day in China turned to trade and $250 billion worth of deals. Kayla Tausche is in Beijing.
President Trump's maiden visit to Beijing, a year after anti-China rhetoric fueled his election victory, brought a change of heart.
Who can blame a country for being able to take advantage of another country for the benefit of its citizens?
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson chalked up the ballooning trade deficit to benign neglect. He said the two countries were far from fixing the underlying issues, but were making progress for companies. More than two dozen companies joined an executive delegation. CEOs like Dow's Andrew Liveris wanted to be at the front of the line for market access.
But I will tell you, the one thing that's very key is turning up, which is why I'm here. I mean, you've got to be part of the tonal shift and understand it from their perspective.
GE, Boeing, and Qualcomm, among those signing deals in Beijing's Great Hall of the People, after winning approval from Presidents Trump and Xi. The administration estimates in total they inked deals worth $250 billion, though some are far from completion or have been previously announced. Goldman Sachs launching a new investment with China's Sovereign Wealth Fund to back American manufacturers exporting to China.
Investment is going to be a win-win. We want Chinese investment in the U.S. because it means jobs, it means opportunity.
President Xi put on a two-day tour de force, rolling out the red carpet, a luxury not afforded to Trump's predecessors. In a closing toast, Xi said the world's two largest economies would move forward as partners, not rivals. The chemistry between the two leaders belies some difficult discussions to come, especially on North Korea. China refused new financial sanctions from the U.S. Secretary Tillerson says they agree on the need to denuclearize North Korea. They just disagree on how. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Kayla Tausche in Beijing.
Coming up, Disney falls short of investor expectations. We'll tell you how and why.
Disney posted year-over-year declines in most of its businesses, with media, its biggest division, falling double digits. As a result, the entertainment company missed Wall Street profit and revenue estimates. Disney earned $1.07 per share. That is a nickel's miss. Revenue came in at nearly $12.8 billion. That one a little light, too. Well, as you might expect, shares initially dropped about 4%, then started to reverse course. Julia Boorstin goes inside those Disney numbers.
Disney's earnings results fell short of expectations, and much of that shortfall came from its media networks division, including ESPN, with higher programming costs and lower advertising revenue and higher fees for subscribers offset by a decline in the number of subscribers. This disappointment for Disney's TV division comes as the company prepares to launch its first ESPN app. CEO Bob Iger saying, quote, "We look forward to launching our first direct-to-consumer streaming service in the new year, and we will continue to invest for the future and take smart risks required to deliver shareholder value." For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Boorstin in Los Angeles.
In the back and forth between the government and AT&T's bid to buy Time Warner, AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson said he was never told he had to sell CNN in order to get approval for the $85 billion merger, nor, he says, did he ever offer to do so. Speaking at the New York Times Deal Book Conference, Stephenson doubled down on why he thinks the big merger makes sense.
And one of the key benefits of putting these two companies together is to stand up a new advertising capability. And so we have built an amazing distribution platform, 150 million mobile subscribers, the largest pay TV base in the United States, a huge broadband base. There's a lot of information and data that we think can be used to stand up a new advertising business. Pairing that with the Turner advertising inventory is a really powerful thing, we believe. That is what we aspire to do. Selling CNN makes no sense in that context.
AT&T was higher by nearly 2% today, and Stephenson also added if the issue goes to court, he's ready to litigate. Well, Macy's forecasts a cheery holiday season, and that is where we begin tonight's Market Focus. Despite missing revenue estimates in its latest quarter, the retailer said it does expect to see strong e-commerce sales during the all-important holiday period. Macy's reported earnings that topped expectations and said tighter inventory controls helped grow profit margins. Shares jumped nearly 11% on the session to $19.50 on this otherwise down day. Kohl's, the latest retailer to cite hurricane disruptions as the reason behind its disappointing profits. Same-store sales edged higher. That was a welcome surprise on Wall Street, which expected the retailer to report yet another quarter of no growth. Kohl's shares up almost 1% to $41.17. After the bell, Nordstrom said higher costs ate into its results. The retailer did top earnings estimates, but revenue came up short. Same-store sales fell more than expected. Shares initially traded lower in after hours, but ended the regular session up 4.5%. to $40.03. The chip maker NVIDIA reported results after the bell that easily topped analysts' expectations. The company also hiked its quarterly dividend 7% to 15 cents a share, said it plans to return more than $1 billion to shareholders during its next fiscal year. NVIDIA initially rose after hours. The shares there ended the regular day down about 2% to $205.32. And finally, Sage Therapeutics said its experimental drug to treat moderate and severe postpartum depression improved patients' symptoms within a few days. The drug maker said it'll file for approval with the FDA in 2018. Shares skyrocketed 54% to $96.65. Equifax reported its financial results hard on the heels of the company's massive data breach that impacted more than 145 million people. After the bell, the credit reporting agency said costs associated with that breach did hurt profits. But nonetheless, the results beat estimates. Shares were initially lower in the extended session, but they did finish the regular day up more than a percent at $108.95. Coming up, what does a small oil company in Oklahoma have to do with the world's largest oil reserves? We went looking for answers. Oil prices climbed today as concern grew over recent political developments in Saudi Arabia. Those include the growing power of the kingdom's young crown prince and steepening tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Well, most of the world's major oil companies are trying to reduce their presence in Venezuela, but we found one small American firm that is eager to work there. Horizontal Well Drillers in Purcell, Oklahoma. It recently won a contract to drill nearly 200 wells in Venezuela. This seemed like an unusual deal. So we started asking questions, and when it was clear that the company wasn't interested in answering them, Michelle Caruso Cabrera went to Oklahoma.
Horizontal Well Drillers first got our attention when two of its executives showed up in a lavish signing ceremony at the Venezuelan presidential palace in July. On the right, General Counsel Brent Mills. On the left, CEO Todd Swanson. Swanson even made a speech.
Señor Presidente, it's been an honor to meet you today and discuss with you and your team the strengthening and expansion of the relationship between our company and your country.
Todd Swanson is addressing Nicolas Maduro, the controversial leader of Venezuela, who's sitting right in the room and seems pleased to have the Americans there.
Todd Swanson, Presidente de Horizontal Well Drillers. Welcome.
Another thing that made this signing ceremony interesting, it occurred just 17 days before the U.S. administration announced that Maduro was being added to the sanctions list. Not even Putin's on that list.
Maduro may no longer take advantage of the American financial system to facilitate the wholesale looting of the Venezuelan economy at the expense of the Venezuelan people.
It's not illegal for a U.S. company to drill in Venezuela, but why would a small firm from Oklahoma want to go into a country rocked by violent protests and saddled with a collapsing economy? Listen to the company's spokesman, Russ Florence.
You probably gathered from some of the stories that Horizontal Well Drillers is not doing a lot of media interviews, haven't done any about this project. They're just wanting to kind of keep a low profile.
So after weeks with no answers, we traveled to Purcell, Oklahoma, population 6,400, to try to get some. We knocked on door after door of executives and former executives of Horizontal Well Drillers.
Hi, I'm
finally showing up at the gated community where Brent Mills lives. That visit prompted this message.
I understand that you've got a crew that's outside of his house. I just talked to Brent. Brent's out of town, so he's not going to be available to talk to you in person. We were going to call and schedule a time for you all to visit.
That supposed visit, it never happened. We drove to Horizontal Well's headquarters, where security took pictures of us while we were taking pictures of them and their three visible rigs.
I was wondering if there's anybody here from the company that we could talk to.
Here you go.
You were told to give this to me, or? Media inquiries about Horizontal Well Drillers are the responsibility of Russ Florence. Yeah, we've talked to him, but he hasn't really been that responsive. There's nobody here that we could talk to?
No comment.
After that, we tried to see Russ Florence in person at his office in Oklahoma City. We eventually got answers via email. The company wrote that a key reason Horizontal Well Drillers got the contract, their rigs are, quote, uniquely qualified for the shallow horizontal wells in geologic formations similar to those found in the Orinoco Belt, and that their rigs have large capacity but a small footprint, so they can fit in difficult-to-reach areas. Their contract is to drill nearly 200 wells in the Orinoco Belt, which is home to the largest oil reserves in the world. Pedro Borelli, a corporate finance consultant who opposes the current Venezuelan government, used to sit on the board of Venezuela's oil company. He has serious doubts about this deal.
Under no circumstance that I know of, a contract of this amount would go to a company of that characteristics. I'm not questioning their ability to do small jobs. I'm just questioning their credentials to do large jobs.
Paperwork filed with the Oklahoma County Clerk shows the company has been financed, at least in part, by Calidus Capital, a Canadian firm that provides, quote, funding solutions to companies that cannot access traditional lending sources. As for their finances, neither Calidus nor Horizontal Well Drillers would comment. As to why they would agree to participate in a signing ceremony with Nicolas Maduro in the midst of violent protests against his rule, Horizontal Well Drillers told us the signing ceremony was required.
Why would Nicolas Maduro insist or require these two Americans to come down and do a signing ceremony in front of him?
They're trying to say we're not isolated. Look, there's some Americans here who actually disagree with the president, who are willing to come and be here and invest in Venezuela.
But having them there is about using them as props for Maduro.
Absolutely.
This isn't the only time the Venezuelan president has used American executives in a photo op. Back in September, the country's oil company tweeted out photos of him meeting with executives from Chevron, not just with Nicolas Maduro, but also the country's vice president, who's on the sanctions list in the U.S. because the Department of Justice says he's running a drug empire. The man on the left with his eyes closed, that's the Chevron executive. Pedro Borelli thinks he was ambushed, as it would be unlikely he would agree to meet with two sanctioned individuals.
Back to this small company from Oklahoma. They say their technology is perfectly equipped to do this job. Can they pull it off? Is it?
I spoke with two drilling experts, including one who did freelance work for horizontal well drillers. They said any drills that had worked in the Permian Basin would have worked in Venezuela. So these drills may be perfectly adequate, but not necessarily better than any others that could have been down there.
Michelle, thank you very much. Great story. Good tale to tell. All right, that is Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Tyler Matheson. Thanks so much for watching. Have a great evening, everybody, and we will see you right back here tomorrow.